Come out, Virginia, don't any wait. Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Ah, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Michael Wald, the host of Ask the Blood Detective, and thank you so much for joining me today to discuss what I think is an extremely important and not so much talked about topic of how to eat. Now, I'll say that again. I said how to eat, not necessarily what to eat. And when I speak about how to eat, I'm really talking about eating mindfully. You know, to cultivate a certain level of mindfulness, we can do the same things we always do in life, you know, whether we're sitting or working or walking. And of course, the topic of today is eating and so on, but with mindful awareness that we are actually doing those things. So when we're eating, we know that we're eating at that moment. And when we open a door, we know that we're opening a door. Our mind is with our actions. And that key point, I believe, based on my 26 or so years of doing natural health, can make the absolute difference between doing the right things for your health. Again, exercise, eating right, taking your nutritional supplements, juicing, detoxification, you name it. The list, of course, is practically endless. But doing a thing, it may not be, I'm suggesting to you, the same thing as being that thing. And the way in which we can maximize, at least in part, the health benefits that we want, which is energy and clarity of mind and hopefully a long life, or at least a life that is free from disability or at least minimizes disability. And I believe that mindful eating is the key. So again, when you put a piece of fruit in your mouth, for example, all you need is a little bit of attention or a little bit of mindfulness to be aware that, for example, I am putting a piece of orange in my mouth. Your mind doesn't need to be somewhere else. If you're thinking of work while you're chewing your food, that's not mindful eating. And when you pay attention to that piece of orange or that apple or that carrot or whatever it is, that is mindfulness. And when you contemplate it more during the process of what you're doing, when you look more deeply and in just a very short time into what you're eating, you will see so much more from what you're eating. You'll see, for example, with the apple, you'll see the apple seed. You might see the people on the farm that pick those apples and process those apples for us. Maybe you'll see the person who's driving, you know, the apples to the grocery store or to the farm where you might pick that food up. You might certainly see, I hope, the beautiful orchard and the sky above that orchard. And you'll realize that there's quite a lot of work that goes into that piece of food. This process of addressing what it is you're doing in that moment can give you access and a level of attentiveness that could potentiate your health efforts by dozens or hundreds of times without exaggeration. I've seen people over the years that have done everything exactly right. I've looked at their food logs and their diet logs over many days or even weeks, and they could not have eaten any better for their particular health issue. They've made sure to take the right nutritional supplements based upon their laboratory work and based upon their symptoms and their health goals. They've juiced organically and eaten almost all organic or farm-raised foods. Along the path of them managing their health problems, and some of those people did not do well. But then, on the other hand, I've seen individuals who have done exactly those correct things in terms of practice. But the difference between this second group of people that I'm thinking of now is that they brought a particular level of mindfulness to what they were doing, and their health results were far beyond what was expected. So it's not merely the what you're doing, it's the how you're doing it when it includes mindfulness that I believe makes the difference between life and death in some cases. With just a bit of mindfulness, you could see where the bread comes from. You know, bread comes from the wheat fields and the hard work of those who are managing it, and the baker and the supplier and who sells it. But the bread itself is much more than that. You know, the wheat field needs clouds and it needs a certain amount of sunshine. And that slice of bread, within that bread, there's sunshine. There's a cloud. There's the labor that we can appreciate of the farmer, the joy of using the flour in our baking. And of course, then the skill of the cook or the baker, and miraculously there's bread. So we're really appreciating that moment that the whole universe, the whole cosmos comes together in this miraculous way, so that this piece of bread can be in your hand and in your mouth and then becomes incorporated as part of you. And you don't need to do a whole lot of work to get this sort of insight. You only need to stop your mind from carrying you away with thinking and stress and worrying and planning. A little less focus on the diagnosis or your particular health problems, but more focus on the food. Really contemplating the food. You know, on a related note, and to paraphrase Plato, he said, I wasn't there at the time, of course, but this is what I've been told. He said, look not at the disease a person has, but the person that has the disease. So if you're of an anxiety mindset, for example, intensity, and you've brought that intensity and your intelligence to your health efforts, you're doing all the right things. Remember, the right supplements, the right foods, and you're timing your meals, and they're low glycemic, and they're GMO, and they're non-gluten. You do all those things. You'll get a certain health potential. But if you consider for a moment that, you know, people tend to think, we all do, I think, that our bodies actually belong to us, and that we can do, you know, anything we want to our bodies. But, you know, your body, if you would practice mindfulness, you'd come to realize that your body is not only yours. It belongs to your parents. It belongs to your ancestors. It belongs to multiple future generations. It belongs to a society and to all living beings. Being mindful of the fact that it's the clouds and the trees and the soil and every living thing that is what brought about your body. So we can eat with great care, being present to what we're eating, knowing that we're simply caretakers of our bodies rather than their owners. And this perspective may have you recognize that you're not alone in the process of maintaining and building your health. For me, it simply makes taking care of my body the best that I can not only easier, but I'm far more present to the fact that my body knows how to heal, and I want to free that body up by not being so significant about things, just appreciating things like how to eat. Consider this for a second. You know, when we're eating, I'm not sure about everyone else out there, but I certainly am thinking sometimes when I'm eating. And I believe we can enjoy our eating a whole lot more if we actually practice, like we practice anything else, a backhand in tennis or a golf swing or yoga, if we practice not thinking when we eat and just be aware of the food we're eating at the time. You know, when we eat and we're not aware that we're eating, our mind, our nervous systems, our digestive tracts, our whole being is simply not there. When our minds are not present, we're looking at our foods, we're looking at the people around us and our environment, but our mind is not present. So we're looking, but we're not seeing, we're not listening, we're simply not hearing. We don't even know the flavor, you know, of what it is we're eating. And this basically is a state of forgetfulness, an absolute lack of mindfulness. So to be truly present, we need to practice stopping our thinking. That, I think, is the secret, the key to the potential of mindfulness, allowing us to reach a level of health we never thought was possible simply by going through the motions of health. So again, I mentioned it earlier in the show that I've talked about these certain healthy diet basics, you know, of what to eat. And some of us and some of you and my patients might have misunderstood that some of these things I'll review right now, just a couple of important bullet points, are not really about how to eat. They're about practices that are helpful in terms of potential, but they're not how to eat. So when I say to you that you want to increase the amount of whole and unprocessed foods in your diet, fresh fruits and vegetables and grains and raw nuts and seeds, for example, relative to the amount of any processed foods you might consume, which I would hope you're not consuming any or maybe small amounts. So those are the pastas and the refined breads and packaged foods that are typical supermarket packaged foods, not your health food store variety, which are very different. These are directions. They are instructions of what to do, but they're not about how to be as you do them. So as you increase the amount of unprocessed foods like fruits and vegetables, we want to bring that mindfulness to the process of consuming them, which I'll get back to in a moment. So again, when I say to my patients, which I think is a good idea for everyone to diversify our diets by including new and different foods, something, you know, every week, rotating the foods so you don't consume a given food every day, this helps you ensure a certain variety of exposure and intake of nutrition, of nutrient intake. But again, these instructions are what to do. They're not how to eat or how to be mindful to this process. Again, when I say that a fat-free diet is not healthy, you know, fats of the healthy variety, the monounsaturated fats like avocados and the unsaturated and some naturally saturated fats you would find in raw nuts and seeds, The total fat, avocados, which I mentioned, olive oil, which is cold-pressed, virgin, imported olive oil, that's the best. Fat should constitute between 20 and 30% of our whole diets. Of course we want to, these are instructions now about health, limit saturated fat intake that you would find in animal products. We want to eat as low down on the food chain as possible, more plant-based things as we work up. And we want saturated fats to constitute, I would say, less than 10% of our total diets. And if we avoid fried foods and hydrogenated and partially hydrogenated oils and cottonseed oil, we can accomplish that. So the healthy oils, we absolutely need. We need them for anti-inflammatory effects and to thin the blood, since most health problems are associated with thicker or viscous blood, which of course leads to stroke and cardiovascular disease and poor oxygenation of tissues. So again, what I'm doing here for you is I'm trying to distinguish between how-to steps and being steps. I've said before in many of my shows that you're not what you eat, and you're actually not what you absorb from what you eat. You know, when you're present to your food, You could simply be joy. You can be mindfulness once you're engaged. And from a practical, physiologic point of view, when you direct your mind to what it is you're eating, you activate your physical body very differently than when you go through eating as a rote sort of practice. This is a key point here I've not discussed yet. So let me say it again. When we bring mindfulness to eating, when we're simply thinking about what we're eating and the miracle of that food in front of us, we activate our nervous systems fully, not partially, but fully. We need our nervous system to digest and process our food. So when you're thinking about mindfulness and being mindful, your brain, your spinal cord, the nerves that come off of your spine, your peripheral nervous system that travel throughout your body, going to piercing, synapsing is the technical neurological term, with your organs. Let's talk about our digestive organs. When we engage our minds in the process of eating and the process of mindfulness, our stomach prepares properly by its stomach lining producing stomach acid and other digestive enzymes. But on the other hand, when we're rushing to get our foods down, or we're not rushing, we're eating the foods, but our minds are elsewhere, everywhere else other than the food we're eating at that moment, our stomach acids are generally not prepared for the food. So when you eat the food, number one, you may not be chewing it properly, tasting it, feeling the texture of the food, again, those mindfulness activities. And when you're not present to food and you're not tasting it, you're not chewing enough. So food then goes down through your mouth, into your esophagus, into your stomach, and the stomach is simply not well prepared. So you would maldigest that food potentially. And then you have these maldigested food products from the stomach entering your small intestine, and your small intestine then becomes overburdened with these partially undigested foods because mindfulness was not brought to the practice of eating. And again, mindfulness is pretty easy. We simply need to pay attention and bring our attention back as it leaves our food, back to the food, back to the food, the process of chewing it and tasting it and contemplating it so that our bodies are prepared to maximize its effects. And the practice of mindfulness with food is not something that only applies to eating food. So when we're present to our loved ones in front of us, or we're fully present to your exercise routine, you're in the moment. You're not in the past, and you're not in a future that hasn't happened yet. You truly would be present in the moment, this moment, the next moment, the present moment at the time. So here's another example. So for example, when we serve ourselves food and we bring the food to the table, we don't need to feel that we're waiting for other people to serve themselves and be seated and then we all eat. All we need to do is enjoy the process of sitting and our surroundings. And now we can enjoy the time, the few moments we have to truly breathe. You know, we haven't eaten our food yet, but we can already be grateful for the food. We can feel the joy of receiving the food. It's essentially mindfulness, an opportunity for us to be peaceful. And when our minds are peaceful, our cells are peaceful. And every cell, tissue, organ, gland, and organ system of the body, when you are mindful to what you're eating or any process in life, I'll say that again, when you're mindful to anything that you're doing in life, you have mindful energy that's set up in your body, which is conducive to healing and disease prevention, and of course, joy and gratitude. You know, I can remember a time when I hated shopping. I would dread going to the grocery store and going through those aisles, some of them super cold, and some of the smells annoyed me, and I'd wait on those long lines. And I found myself a bit anxious, and I noticed it one day during the shopping experience, the grocery shopping experience, and I said, I'm losing my life by being anxious and being elsewhere and thinking I don't need to be shopping. I can be doing 100 other things. So, you know, whether you're standing in line at the grocery store or for a movie or a restaurant or waiting for the time to eat, we don't need to be wasting our time. We don't need to wait, even the concept of waiting at all. We can instead simply enjoy our breathing in and out and the nourishment of how that feels. We can use the time to notice that we'll soon be able to be home to eat or enjoy the next environment. And we can enjoy the grocery store. We can look up and smile at the person next to us and really look at them, and we can thank the cashier for taking care of us. The point is, we can enjoy more of the moments that we have because they are so limited. You know, as a doctor who lectures all over the world, and I have for the last, you know, several decades, well, you know, more than two decades, I would have to fly quite a lot. And the concept of the airport, as you might imagine, was just pure dread. That's what I was present to. I was present to just pure dread. The drive to the airport, it generally was LaGuardia or Kennedy, and getting to the airport and not getting lost, finding my terminal, and then finding parking, and then remembering you know, where I parked, and then walking into the airport and having to go through a long line of security and take my belt off and take my shoes off and take the computer out of my bag and take any of the toiletries out as well, but put that in a separate bin, et cetera, take everything out of your pockets. And, you know, just what I interpreted at the time is just the attitude of people around me and the people working at the airport. And then finally getting through security and then having to wait and then dealing with delays, I just was miserable. And I might have to go, let's say, to Boston one day to do a lecture from 8:30 a.m. and I'd have to get up at about 6 a.m. to prepare, and it would end at around 4:30, and I would be talking, standing in front of an audience for all of those hours after going through hours and hours of traveling, sometimes not getting to my hotel room until after 1 o'clock in the morning. And after doing this for several years, I was walking through the airport one day, pretty aggravated, you know, along this journey I just described, and I realized that I did not have to be miserable. I could actually embrace the process of traveling. So I recognized that in a moment, and everything shifted for me. At this point, I very much enjoy traveling. I don't mind a delay. Look, if a delay is going to happen, I'm going to be present to whatever it is I want during that delay. Maybe it's a good book that I can really focus on once I have acknowledged and accepted the fact that I have another 2 hours or so to wait for the plane. And when I'm on that plane, I can look at the person next to me and say hello. And I can inquire about how their day went and listen to them tell me about, you know, their experiences and really, really listen. So I find that I'm extremely productive during my travels. I like to walk through the airport and look at people and give them a smile. And sometimes when I'm on the line there getting my cup of coffee or tea, that I talk to the person online, and I find it a much more enriching experience. So this is an example of how I turned just average frustrations in life to something that I really, really, really look forward to. And I've done the same thing with my exercise and my long distance running. I used to run because I just always ran. You know, funny story is I grew up in a neighborhood where it was quite dangerous, and I was always running from someone, and I became a runner. And one day I recognized that I was in the process of running on some trail, but I was not at all present to the beauty of the trail. I was frustrated. I even was aware of a tension in my chest. I just didn't want to run, but I always found myself running. But one day I'm running along this trail in Westchester called the Cross County Trail. And it's a narrow trail and covered with a canopy of trees. And it was beautiful. And it's a beauty I barely acknowledged at the time. And I'm running, and all of a sudden I'm shocked because a deer runs straight across from me, so close it brushed up against my chest. And then it stopped within about 3 feet of me, turned its head and looked at me with these sweet eyes, and my heart was pounding out of my chest. But it was a shock that brought me back to the present. I was staring into the face of a deer. I mean, if I leaned forward enough, I could have kissed it on the nose. And from that moment, when I run, I am mindful to my run. I can feel my heartbeat. I'm grateful for how it's beating. I can visualize it doing that and pushing the blood throughout my body. And every step that I take, or practically every step, I acknowledge the gratefulness that I have, that I can move my legs this way, that I can put one foot in front of the other. And rather than dreading how I felt as I was running, because sometimes the runs were hard, I was very appreciative of the fact that my body could do this. And I thank the universe for it. And for years, every time I ran, I tried to run a little bit faster by a few seconds or even a single second than I did the prior run. And I did this for over 10 years. And if I failed to get that second or more, I interpreted the run as a failure. How silly was that? When I gave up that concept by simply enjoying and being present to the joy of running, I didn't care about the time. The time didn't matter. So I think you can see now a little bit of how bringing mindfulness to any activity opens up joy and appreciation. And I would find myself running, and I would find myself in the airport with a smile on my face. And I would notice people smiling back at me. And I wondered, why are they smiling at me? But they were responding to my smile, which then allowed me to be even more present to them. I'd like to share with you also that this process of being mindful to life and of course the topic of today's show, to our eating, opened up something entirely unpredictable to me. And that is a heightened level of perception. In my experience, I've become so practiced at being present to people in front of me, particularly my patients, that I often get very strong impressions immediately, and oftentimes before they say a single word to me, of what their health issues are, or that they health issues that they didn't even know they had. When I was walking through the airport one day, I noticed a man on the phone, and he seemed agitated. And he's talking on the phone. It was a payphone at the airport at the time. This was about, I guess, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, something like that. And as I walked to him, I got a strong impression of cancer. As I looked at him and really looked at the man, and I stopped in my tracks across from him, in a very crowded airport, looking at him, he seemed to glow yellow to me. And I rubbed my eyes a bit and I looked away and I looked back at him, and he was still bright yellow in my mind. I started to walk away, thinking about how strange this was, and then I decided to turn back, and I started to walk towards him, and I stood near him, very close, and he put the phone down and he said, "Can I help you?" in a very agitated voice. And I said, "I'm so sorry to bother you, but are you okay?" And his eyes widened and his jaw dropped, and he became a whole other shade of yellow and white. And he said, I'm on the phone right now, and I've just been told that I have a devastating illness." I said, "Is it your liver? Do you have liver cancer?" And he started to cry, started to bawl uncontrollably. And he said, "Yes, I do. How did you know?" I said, "I don't know, but I'm here to help." And that was an example of how being mindful to my surroundings and to people allowed a certain access to a skill that I've found very useful in my daily practice. Another time, I was at a medical convention, and I was one of the instructors. And this was a particularly large convention of doctors and health practitioners of over 700. And what happened was, I was standing online to get a water, and the woman who was working the cashier, she seemed a shade of green and yellow. And as I approached her, and I was more and more present to her the longer I stood on that line, and I was told that that line took at least a half an hour to get to me, and it seemed to be 3 seconds in my perception. So I wasn't present to the wait. I was present to the person. And I said to her, "I'm going to say something strange to you, but do you need to go home today?" And she said, "I wish I could go home. I feel very bad. I was told by the doctor that I have a health problem, a very significant health problem, but I've been too scared to call them back." And before she could even complete her sentence, she said, "I've got to sit down." And she sat down on the floor over the counter. And I said to her, after I got her some water, I said, "Just breathe. Let me talk to your manager, and let's get you home. In fact, let's get you to the hospital." And she looked up at me and she said, I think you're right. I think I need to go to the hospital." And she asked me to call her sister, and I did. And I asked her sister if she can come and get her, and her sister started to explain that her sister was ill. And I said, "Is it her pancreas, and does she have cancer spread throughout her body?" And she said, "Yes. In fact, the doctor was going to let her know of this news today." So again, this is an example of a perception that many of us could develop by merely being present to people. And the point of it is, there are many examples I could give you of impressions I've had and that I've acted upon with the cooperation of people who see me, so we can prevent issues like the examples I just gave you now. But in order to be mindful and to develop this sort of perception, and I think everyone has the potential for it, we need to slow down. We need to slow down in life and really enjoy what's happening. And back to food, we need to really enjoy our food. You know, our life takes on a much deeper quality when we slow down. And I particularly enjoy, and I hope you do, to sit and eat quietly and enjoy every single bite of what I'm eating. I'm aware of the presence of the surrounding community that I'm in and the environment. I'm aware of the hard work and the loving work that's gone into preparing the food that I have. And I find that if we should choose, we need to choose to eat this way. Not only do we become physically nourished, but also energetically and spiritually nourished as well. So the way that I eat and the way that you eat influences everything else that you do during your day. So mindful eating and knowing how to eat is not merely about eating. It's a practice that can spill over into your entire life. So again, eating or whatever other activity you're engaged in is an important opportunity, an important time for meditation. Meditation as sitting, meditation as chewing, meditation as exercising, walking. It's a chance to really appreciate the gift of the earth that you would otherwise not benefit from when your mind is everywhere but being present. I like to say when I'm eating that it's like a mantra actually, as I chew my food, my spirit and my mind is nourished. As I choose my food, my spirit and my mind is nourished. And I repeat that so that I teach my nervous system a different habit and how the mantra's purpose, at least the way I see it, one of its purposes is to bring your attention back to what you're doing. So a few simple pointers of mindfulness. So when we chew our food and while we're eating, we need to pay attention to two basic things: the food we're eating and our friends or acquaintances or individuals that are sitting around us and eating with us. And this is called mindfulness of community. So we are present to, again, the food that we're eating and to those around us. And eating mindfully in this way can help us become aware of all of the energy and the work that's gone into bringing the food to us. And when we're eating with others, we can notice how wonderful and what a gift it is that during this very hectic life that we sometimes experience, we can find the time to be together in a relaxed way and sit together and enjoy the meal. We can breathe, we can sit, we can eat with our friends and our family in complete mindfulness and being present in that moment. And that is community building. So if you have heart disease, if you have cancer or an autoimmune disease, or you suffer from fatigue or mental emotional health issues or memory problems, you name it, try and focus on every spoonful of food or forkful of food that you eat. So as you bring the food up to your mouth, use your attention and your mindfulness and be aware of the food as it is. It's a gift that the whole universe is giving to you. The sky, the earth have collaborated to bring you a spoonful or a forkful of food just for you. And as you breathe in and you breathe out, activating your autonomic nervous system and engaging every fiber of your being into the process of being present to your food, you only need a couple of seconds to recognize this. So when you are mindful of each food, you very quickly realize that every morsel of food and every moment that you take within mindfulness, eating that food brings you closer to being present in the moment, maximizing your health potential. And while you're chewing, keep bringing your attention back to your awareness of the food you're eating, because your mind's going to wander, and that's part of the process. Personally, I don't think that meditation, by the way, is the process of clearing the mind. I'm not even sure I know what that means. I think it's quite the opposite. I think that meditation, a mindful meditation, is actually filling your mind with what it is you're doing at the moment. So once again, when we chew, we maintain the awareness that we are now chewing, and knowing that the entire universe is contained in that bite of food. have your mind play around with it, thinking of all of the processes and appreciating what it took to bring you those morsels of food. And managing your body's mindfulness really comes to the concept of breathing. So when you sit down, consider that the first thing you should do with that bowl of food is to stop thinking. And how do you do that? In other words, stop thinking of everything other than the food. Well, one technique would be to bring your awareness to your breathing. Breathe in such a way that you feel nourished. So find a comfortable rhythm of breathing that may take several moments and several practices, but you'll get it. Someone asked me yesterday when I mentioned mindful eating, she said, does that mean I can't watch TV when I'm eating? I said, well, something like that. I mean, you know, sometimes people, of course, very commonly will watch TV while they're eating. And if you turn off the TV, you still have to deal with the TV and the hundreds of cable channels in your mind that just continue to run and run and run. So it really comes down to stopping the TV in your head, not just merely shutting off the TV in your home. And breathing helps us turn off the TV and the cable stations in your mind. So if there is thinking still going on in your mind, you will be dispersed everywhere else other than the eating. So yes, we want to shut off the physical TV. But to be truly present, I think, we have to turn off the radio in the house and the TV in the house and as many distractions as possible. And to turn off the images and the conversations in your head, which are composed of all the stressors and things you want to do in your life. And focusing on breathing is the key. When you focus on your breathing, what you're doing is also, from a physical perspective, is activating a variety of processes in the body, as I described earlier, when I talked about the stomach, creating stomach acid as you're chewing your food and your stomach is preparing itself for the receiving of that food so that it can properly digest food in the stomach and make the appropriate stomach acid. And then your meal is passed on from your stomach into your small intestine, which continues the process in the small intestine that the stomach started of protein digestion. But the small intestine does something that the stomach does not do for digestion. The small intestine helps to, actually does all the digestion of fats and carbohydrates. The breathing process helps to balance what's known as the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous systems. And eating is mostly a parasympathetic response, which is present during true mindfulness or sleeping or resting or sitting calmly. That's all conducive for healing and digestion. But if we're not present to what we're doing and we're not present to our breathing and the breath, our mind wanders. It's in those 200 cable channels. It's back at work. It's literally the mind thinks it's elsewhere and it reacts physiologically to that, not bringing its full attention and healing and digestive and assimilation capacities to the task at hand, which is mindful eating. And you'll find too that when you bring your attention to your eating, you won't eat nearly as much. People tend to eat far more than they need to feel and become nourished. So when people say to me, Dr. Wald, how much do I eat today? What I generally ask them is, I would like you to tell me that. And the way you'll do that is to practice these steps that we're discussing regarding mindfulness. And you'll find that your body will establish its own set point, I guess is a good word. Its own set point. So it will tell you when you have eaten enough. But if we're rushing our foods down our gullets before our brain and nervous system is aware of how much food has entered into our stomach, we're already past the full mark. And this is this will hamper our utilization, assimilation of our foods, which we need to absorb to build health. So being mindful to your meal will tell you automatically, after a few times of practice, how much you should be eating, what pace naturally works for your body as a whole. And this is the difference between doing all of the right things in natural health care, eating all of those right things and juicing all of those right juices, and having your body being present to doing those things such that you maximize your healing potential. So now we can talk about preparing a meal. You know, when you prepare a meal with an artful awareness, it's differently healthy and it's differently delicious. So when you put mindfulness, caring, and even love into a meal, then when you or others eat that food, it is very, very different. It's full of love. It is nourishing in an entirely different way. And this, I think, will allow for you to enjoy the meal with your body and your mind. So eating, I think, should not only be nourishing for the body, but also for the mind. And to quote one of my very favorite movies, The Matrix, the first movie, the body cannot exist without the mind. Very true. Very true. So let's now talk for a moment about the environment of mindful eating, or the environment of anything you do. So the kitchen itself has the potential of being a very meditative place or meditative space where you have the opportunity to practice mindful awareness while you're cooking, whether you're cleaning in there or you're, you know, doing the dishes. So we can set an attention when we're executing the tasks involved in cooking in a very serene way, following your breathing, keeping your concentration on what you're doing. And, you know, I must tell you that I really love to clean now. I shouldn't admit this because if my three kids are listening to this, they might get the wrong idea that I can clean up all their messes. But I enjoy doing the dishes. I enjoy feeling the warm water on my hands. I enjoy feeling the bowl or the utensils that I'm washing that are making my life joyful. And I think about the plumber that put in the faucet, and I think about the contractors that built the kitchen, and I am in awe of all of it. And before I know it, not that I'm in a rush, because I'm generally not, my dishes are done. I mean, I have a dishwasher in my house, but I rarely use it. I like the idea of putting myself in the moment of washing the dishes or wiping down the counters or mopping the floors. And when I tell this to some of my patients, they say, "Dr. Wald, how do you find the time to do that?" It's not a matter of finding the time. It's simply a matter of being present. When you're present, time is just, it fades, because, you know, time is a convention of the mind. There are no such things as seconds or minutes or hours or days or months or years. There's just being present. So when I find myself being ordinary, wondering and stressing about how am I going to get this done and how am I going to get that done and how am I going to write 10 patient protocols tonight and how will I communicate or send those emails or make those calls that I promised so I can maintain my integrity. And when I find myself in that stressed place, my nervous system and my subconscious, I suppose, brings me back to my breathing. And then to the contribution that I make to others And then I find myself smiling, and then I'm on the phone and I'm writing that email, and I've put a mindfulness, love, and attention to my suggestions for the person in front of me. And this is so important. I've found that when I'm present to the person or the people in front of me that have chosen to work with me, and I'm so grateful for it, and I get to know them, and by being present to them, when I put together my suggestions for them, whether it's dietary or other lifestyle or nutritional supplement suggestions, or when we're explaining what there is to do to build health and to manage their health concerns, the very process of being present allows me to develop something that is unique and personalized without giving lip service to providing individualized attention for each person or providing a individualized set of suggestions. The suggestions that I come up with are based upon my being present to the person in front of me and learning where they're at and how they need to do things, so that communication between us is essential for the process of healing. I do not simply stick a person into protocols. I develop suggestions and mindfulness lifestyle practices that fit where the individual is now and help to draw their attention to mindfulness practices of these suggestions so that they can be well. So many practitioners today have plans for their patients drawn out ahead of time. There's nothing wrong with that. But I believe that healing suggestions and methods and choices should be based upon where you are in terms of your comfort following through with different suggestions and implementing them into your lives. And then from starting there, we can develop a true healing plan that becomes not a drudgery or an effort, but simply becomes what feels right for you. You know, I was sitting with a woman last week who was a bit frenetic in her movements, and she sat down and her phone kept going off, and she stood up and she said, "I really can't, you know, I don't prefer sitting." And I noticed that her health issue, among many others, was hypertension. And after a few moments of her, you know, just saying different things and practicing, I guess, what was her version of settling in, I said, "I know the cause of your hypertension." And she said, "Well, we haven't even sat down and talked about things yet. How could you possibly know the cause of my hypertension?" I said, "Because it's very obvious to me, because I'm looking at you and I'm appreciating you being here, and I'm saying to myself how I'm going to dedicate my time and my attention and mental efforts to helping you. And it suddenly occurred to me that you have anxiety." She says, "I don't have anxiety. I do not have anxiety." And this woman was around 68 years old, I believe. And it always is striking to me when I step back for a moment and think, how could another doctor look at this woman and not see the speed of her movements, her darting eyes, the fact that she had a sheen of light sweat on her? She was going through a stress response. And of course, if she goes through a stress response, part of that stress response, that what's known as that fight or flight reaction, is an increase in heart rate and pulse rate and blood pressure. She had seen many very caring, intelligent doctors and practitioners, and not a single person in her life up to that point had even suggested that she had anxiety. Now, at first, she was very resistive, but by the end of our conversation, about an hour and a half or so later, she said, "You know something? It's very obvious to me now that I have anxiety. I don't have a deficiency. She said it very, very well. She said, I don't have a deficiency of antihypertensive medications. What I have is anxiety. And the distinguishing of that and the labeling of that in this case, I felt was very, very important. Because if she didn't label it, if she didn't distinguish it from her daily way of being, she couldn't focus on it. And now we've been together a few times now in consultation, and she is no longer on antihypertensive medications. She has made changes in her life instantly once she brought her mindfulness to her behaviors. And the first thing that we did together was practice mindful breathing. I suggested to her that she should say something like, breathing in, my body is calm, and as I breathe out, I smile. And I had to repeat that process about 100 times a day. I actually asked her to repeat that process as often as she could. And at first, she was quite honest. She said, well, I would do it 2 or 3 times, then I was off in my thoughts again and frenetic and stressed. And then I'd bring my attention back to breathing in and then breathing out and smiling simultaneously. And then she was able to do that 20, 30, 40, 50 times over the course of just a few days. And the point at the beginning is to repeat this behavior so you teach your nervous system a new habit so that it can practice the habit of mindful breathing such that your body itself will remind you to breathe mindfully, and you also can consciously breathe mindfully. And when you reach that connection, all sorts of health opportunities arise by not changing some of the correct things you were doing in terms of your diet and the content of your diet and the content of your exercise, but just bringing mindfulness. You know, one of the final thoughts I'd like to bring to you today is that you may want to try to organize your life so you have the energy and the time to take care of yourself. Don't just shove your health issues in between a busy day, but focus on you. In my mind, structuring your life in a way that is for you opens up all possibilities of mindfulness. And I'll tell you another thing. It's the first time I'm revealing this, but for 26 or so years, I practiced holistic health, and I had partners. Earlier on, I practiced by myself for a bit of time, and I was immediately successful in treating many, many hundreds of patients, sometimes in a week, and doing a good job. But I realized one day that I wanted to know people better. I wanted to provide a different level of access to health and healing, that the structure of my practice, no matter how good I thought I was in it, simply didn't allow. So recently, about 3 weeks ago, I made a dramatic structural change in my life and my practice. I decided, once I realized that I could do more for people and more for myself and my happiness if I did this, is I did away with my front desk. No more front desk. I wanted contact with my patients for all of their needs. So rather than shoving lots of clients and patients into my schedule, although I never overlap them, I always hated how practitioners would do that and have people wait for hours. I simply see fewer patients now. I spend more time with people. I allow more time in between my consultations, and I'm available anytime it feels right, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday or a Monday, which was not usually my work hours. And I have found in a short period of time that I am so much lighter. I am doing so much better. I'm getting to know people that I work with on a whole different level, and our healing efforts are far greater just by me adjusting the structure of my life. And I'm going a step further. I'm going to move from my current home into a home that can accommodate my healing practice because I enjoy my home and I want to bring that enjoyment to my practice all in one place so that I might see a few people and then I might go for a run or I might cook a meal mindfully, or I simply might do those dishes mindfully. So I'm very excited, and I want you to know if you should choose me, for example, as your healthcare provider, that you will have my full attention and mindfulness. And I guess I'll end there. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Dr. Michael Wald, and I'm the director of longevity at my health center in Westchester, Mount Kisco, about an hour north of New York City. I provide in-person consultations, of course, but I also do phone and Skype consults for people that are local and for people in other states and even countries. If you'd like to reach me for show ideas or to work with me or anything, please give me a call at 914-242-8844. You can email me at www.drmichaelwald.com. That's DR as in doctor. So drmichaelwald.com. And you can listen to some of my other shows that are on my website at www.integratednutritionny.com under the blog section. So thank you so much for your mindfulness, your time and attention today. And I hope you tune in to my next show, which I think is a very unique show where I'll describe a variety of common health issues that many of you may have now and how traditional allopathic practitioners might approach that, whether it's MS or cancer or autoimmune disease or gut issues or neurologic problems or memory problems. And I'll go through exactly what a traditional physician and specialist would do compared to what I believe a mindful, holistic, personalized approach would treat it. And you'll be shocked, I think, even beyond what you think you may know now about how allopathic approaches and natural health approaches are different. And knowing these distinctions can help you make more intelligent, more informed, and more personalized healthcare choices. So we'll be talking about allopathic approaches to health and disease head-to-head against natural medicine approaches. I hope to see you then. And have a wonderful day.